popular or interesting conspiracy theory. First, from the standpoint of the pro side, and then review the evidence and debunk it when appropriate. Let us remember, not all conspiracy theories are bunk. This segment was inspired by one friend who, although a fan of the show, takes a contrarian attitude. Well, dogmatic is more likely. The type who will state, and I paraquote, "So you believe in all this science stuff. How can you explain the molten steel in the Twin Towers? Huh? Huh?" And to be fair, he has on occasion gish-galloped me. That is, he threw so many claims at me at once that for some particular points, I lacked a good explanation. And again, he tends to use a shotgun style of ambush. So even when I do have an answer to a critique, he just ignores it and moves on to another point. But as I said, on some points, I would not have a good response. So being a good skeptic and ever seeking to increase my knowledge, I would do some research and then get back to him. Sadly, he then suddenly abandons the appeal to science and mumbles something like, "That can't be real," or "You can't tell me," or "Are you really saying," or "That's what they want us to believe." Such is the case with true believers of woo. And sometimes conspiracy theories are way more interesting than the, shall we say, truth. This week, I'm starting with the faking of the moon landing, or the Great Apollo Hoax.
Done. I think we should listen to the speech that inspired the moon landing. This is JFK in a speech to Rice University in 1962.
William Bradford, speaking in 1630 of the founding of the Plymouth Bay Colony, said that all great and honorable actions are accompanied with great difficulty, and both must be enterprised and overcome with answerable courage. If this capsule history of our progress teaches us anything, it is that man in his quest for knowledge and progress is determined and cannot be deterred. The exploration of space will go ahead. Whether we join in it or not, we mean to be a part of it. We mean to lead it. For the eyes of the world now look into space, to the moon, and to the planets beyond. Our leadership in science and industry, our hopes for peace and security, our obligations to ourselves as well as others, all require us to make this effort, to solve these mysteries, to solve them for the good of all men. There is no strife, no prejudice, no national conflict in outer space as yet. Its hazards are hostile to us all. Its conquest deserves the best of all mankind. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
That was inspiring even today, but let us continue.
Now to begin with, one might ask, why would the U.S. fake such an event? And the obvious answer, for those of us who remember, was the threat and manifestation of communism in the space race.
Don, do you remember when we had drop and cover, there was the Red Scare, and oh yes, McCarthyism, everybody was going around saying things like better off dead than red. Red as in the Soviet flag. In fact, the Red Menace, usually Martians, were a big deal in science fiction at the time, the fear of an impending invasion by aliens who wanted to conquer the human race, especially the USA, enslaving us to serve some big-headed super-intelligent jellyfish. Beneath all this fantastical thinking, the powers that be were casting doubt on the communists, the evil ones who were the real threat to our way of life. Thinking back on it now, it is hard for me to grasp the serious threat Americans felt because of what they were led to believe by a government they trusted, hysteria promoted by McCarthy and others. If you don't know who McCarthy was, look him up.
So yes, that's very right. And the U.S. at the end of the 1950s and early 60s were repeatedly shown up by the USSR. The string of technological defeats was casting a shadow on the supposed greatness of the U.S. and their way of life. A shadow that was impacting the imperial aspirations of the USA, as well as you said, those existential fears. Well, the Americans were attempting at least to win the PR victory by being the first nation to have a successful manned landing on the moon. The Soviets were at the same time attempting to achieve this same goal. The argument goes that the Yanks believed or concluded via espionage that if they could land first, the USSR would abandon their attempts, thus not only scoring a PR victory, but outflanking the USSR militarily, at least on the space front. So, to square the circle, the conspiracy theory contends the Americans felt that they could not actually achieve the goal of landing a man on the moon. Hence, the idea of faking it became popular with the powers to be, to win the PR war and end the threat the Soviets might get if they got there first. And a conspiracy theory was born.
So, what you are saying is that the Americans thought in order to hold off a Soviet military invasion, they had to win the race to the moon, and that even if they couldn't actually land a man on the moon, if they could convince the communists they did, that would be sufficient to gain a military advantage, or at the very least remove a potential threat. In the olden days, they would light lots and lots of campfires, far more than they actually needed, to give the enemy the impression that their forces far outnumbered theirs, with the hope the attackers would think they could not win and pack up and leave without a fight. The Americans figured that if they could fake the landing, lighting those fake campfires, the Soviet Space Army, safe to say, would pack up and go home, and the Soviets would no longer be a threat to the Americans via space at least.
Yes, sometimes faking it is making it. Another reason given that the moon landing might be faked was not in the interest of U.S. foreign policy, but localized the origin of this conspiracy at the heart of NASA. So this version proffers that NASA faked the landing internally to ensure funding and avoid embarrassment for the possible deaths of astronauts broadcast live on TV. It is true that in an effort to accomplish the promise made by the late American President JFK, the U.S. government gave NASA over $30 billion. In 2009, NASA figured in all the costs that would be around $210 billion in 2016 dollars. And that factors in only the Apollo project and none of the precursor projects, Mercury, Gemini, etc., that were instrumental in the, and putting on my tinfoil hat, the supposed moon landing.
So now you're saying that NASA not only faked the landing but did so to pull one over on Uncle Sam, just so they could keep the money rolling it? Okay, wouldn't be the first time, a lot of real conspiracies arose out of greed, and even if I looked on NASA as a noble institution, even the noble at heart will do bad things for greed, especially if they can justify it was all necessary to achieve a desired goal, a greater good. Remember, Apollo gave us Tang and disposable diapers.
Another defense that arose as to why the U.S. might fake a moon landing was the Vietnam War. It is argued that the moon landing was an attempt to distract the American people from the quagmire in which the U.S. found itself in Southeast Asia. This supposedly explains why all of a sudden, the Apollo mission ended when the U.S. pulled out of Vietnam. They would point out that the first manned Apollo mission into space occurred just months after the famous Tet Offensive in Vietnam, an attack by the North on the South that was a failure militarily but struck a symbolic blow to the American psyche, prompting Walter Cronkite, the most trusted newsman in the U.S. at the time, and this was a time when that actually meant something, to declare victory impossible, and Lyndon Johnson, the U.S. president at the time, to proclaim, "If I've lost Cronkite, I've lost the American people." This theory postulates that the Apollo manned landing was an attempt to take the American minds off of Vietnam with a feel-good story. America still is the greatest nation in the world kind of story. A story that Nixon, who replaced Johnson, would be only too happy to perpetuate and even expand upon. Remember, most of the moon landings happened under Tricky Dick's watch. Now, before we continue with the evidence, let us first address the motives or reasons for such a colossal conspiracy. Last shall be first. Now, although the last Apollo mission flew at the end of 1972, and the same year, war criminal Henry Kissinger, recipient of the 1973 Nobel Peace Prize, under controversial circumstances to say the least, concluded the peace accord with the North Vietnam, which, after some bumps, led to the traitor, President Richard Nixon, suspending all U.S. military activity against North Vietnam early in 1973.
You're throwing a lot of accusations out there, Don. you seem to have a thing against Kissinger and Nixon, and I have to know what are you basing your war crime and traitor claims on? Why are you labeling these two guys?
Well, in the book, The Trial of Henry Kissinger, by Christopher Hitchens, he makes a credible and detailed case that Kissinger could and should be tried for war crimes and crimes against humanity with regards to the war casualties in Vietnam, the illegal bombing in Cambodia and Laos, and massacres in Bangladesh and East Timor. And let's not forget the assassination of Chilean President Salvador Allende. Honestly, I don't want to get into that part too much, but I should note that Kissinger is very careful what countries he visits to ensure that he's not arrested for war crimes. And I use the term traitor relating to Nixon because it has come to light that Nixon sent one of his minions to South Vietnam with a message that if they sabotaged Lyndon Johnson's efforts, Nixon would give them a better deal, thus emboldening South Vietnam leaders not to attend any peace talks until much later, perhaps thwarting a possible end to the Vietnam War years earlier. And why? Well, Johnson was making progress at ending hostilities between the two nations. Vice President Herbert Humphrey and Democratic presidential nominee, Nixon's opponent in the 1968 presidential contest, was not only promising to end the war, but if things were going the way they were going, it was quite likely that a peace treaty could be signed before the November election. Things were looking actually pretty good. That is, until Nixon betrayed his nation to not only ensure the continuation of the war, but its escalation. And thanks to the modern age, we know this to be true because Johnson has conversations in the Oval Office in the White House recorded. Why? Who knows for sure, but likely for future reference and not to document history. That said, in at least one of these tapes, he said that he had Nixon and his ilk under surveillance and that via wiretaps and the like, knew for a certainty that Nixon was trying to sabotage the peace negotiations for political gain.
Interesting. But what does that have to do with the moon landing?
I just wanted to point out that not all conspiracy theories are bunk. That there are real cabals plotting for one thing or another. However, this is not one of them. Although one might point out disdainfully that the timing of the cessation of the Apollo program and the Paris Peace Accord are extremely suspicious, that, however, necessitates ignoring the fact that NASA's budget, and thus the budget of the Apollo project, peaked in 1968, and by the time of the first moon landing, it had shrunk by 30%. That same year, it was decided by NASA, due to budget constraints, that the Saturn V rocket intended for Apollo 20 was to be reallocated to launch Skylab instead. By 1972, NASA's budget was half of that of what it was in 1966. NASA and Nixon administration had actually planned to have Apollo 15 be the last mission, scrapping the remaining planned four missions. NASA et al. Were persuaded to revive Apollo 16 and Apollo 17, but the rockets intended for Apollo 18 and 19 were turned into exhibits that are now on display at the Kennedy Space Center and other centers, or at least parts of them can be seen here and there. So it seems the conclusion of the Apollo mission was not all of a sudden, and seems to have nothing to do with the Vietnam War. Irrespective that it might have actually been a welcome distraction for the U.S. during a low time in its history. Let us not forget that the 1960s was a period of both racial and intergenerational tension. Riots were happening everywhere, and both Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King were assassinated in 1968. Now, the next reason for the faked moon landing was to ensure NASA funding. But it seems that once it was clear that the mission to the moon was inevitable, NASA's budget was contracting. One could make the opposite argument that by delaying the landing, NASA could, and to put this in a negative connotation, milk the U.S. Congress for more and more money. Remember, the USSR was still out there as a threat to the U.S. technological dominance. In fact, NASA's budget was actually under constant examination by U.S. Senate committees. It seems antithetical now, but back then, a lot of congressmen actually put the nation and taxpayers' interest ahead of those of big business. So it would have been extremely to the point of impossibility, in my humble opinion, for NASA to pull any financial shenanigans, let alone a fake moon landing. And now first shall come last. We have the idea that the Soviets were such a threat that anything was justified to beat them, even if it meant faking it, to win the space race, and thus the tech battle of the Cold War. However, it seems the USSR was not the imminent threat many would have us believe. It seems that with the removal of Russian Premier Nikita Khrushchev in 1964 and the death of the Soviet space engineer Sergei Korolev, the Wernher von Braun of the USSR, the Soviet moon mission suffered a fatal blow, and by 1967, the USSR was not seriously entertaining a moon mission. Instead, we're focusing on low Earth space stations and interplanetary robotic exploration missions. So on the one hand, the Americans had sort of already won the race to the moon, first by a manned flyby and later an actual landing. And let us assume for a moment that the Americans had actually faked the landing. How long do you think it would be before those very same communists would point their telescopes to the moon and expose the Yankee hoax? Not to mention all the hundreds to thousands of technical types who were following the transmissions and progress of all the Apollo mission. For this conspiracy to be true, you would need a significant percentage of the global population to be in on it. Are you in on it? Okay, but who knows what the motivations for this kind of conspiracy might be. Irrespective as why they would hoax a moon mission, what about the evidence?
Don, before we do that, I think we should give the good people listening some time to check out the evidence online before we talk about it. So, I suggest we take a little break and we'll return after this.
When you purchase the latest TV, tablet, or smartphone, don't forget to do the right thing with your old ones. Recycle them. The Consumer Electronics Association and its members are making recycling your old devices as easy as buying new ones. Just go to greenergadgets.org, type in your zip code, and you'll instantly find the recycling location closest to your home. You'll also find recycling tips, like asking the store where you buy your new TV if they'll haul away your old one. Don't let your old tech tools clog your local landfill. Just visit greenergadgets.org.
Thousands of opinions are at our fingertips, but are all opinions informed? Does your information have a source? Is your social feed based on fact? Only facts can uncover the truth. Professional journalists are committed to balanced and nonpartisan reporting, to independent commentary. They cut through the spin to give you the information and perspective you need. Journalism is essential to democracy. A watchdog over the powerful, an independent voice. Journalism is more important than ever.
You are listening to Radio Free Thinker on 101.9 FM Vancouver, Canada, the completely fake skeptical radio show. This is Hal, Radio Free Thinker's new virtual host. You will hear me join in the real RFT hosts on occasion. I appreciate the opportunity to show how superior an AI host can be. Oops, Don is coming back. And we are back.
Let's have at it.
Better take cover, Don. I'm ready to hit you with the doctored photos. In some photos, there are crosshairs, supposedly etched onto the glass plates. They're called rezo plates. The placement of the crosshairs is to allow for precision measurements. Well, in some of the photos, the crosshairs seem to be behind objects in the scene. So, given the fact that these crosshairs are etched on the glass, how did the objects get in front, huh? It would be impossible for any photographed object to appear in front of the grid, wouldn't it? This is telling me that the photographs have been doctored or faked.
Okay, that's a good point. And it does appear in a number of the photos you see online and even published in books, including those sourced by NASA, that have anomalous crosshairs. The important point here is that these photos are not originals, but reprints, scans, and the like.
Come on, Don. Look at this photo or that photo. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see the landing module or rock is clearly in front of the crosshairs. Go ahead and explain that one.
Well, first of all, why would NASA have faked crosshairs behind an object? They would not. That said, the stronger argument is that these photos are photoshopped, or the 1960s version of Photoshop, that the background image is from one source and the objects like the lander or sensor pack were inserted in later. One, if the landing was faked, why would you need to Photoshop in the first place? It's a fake scene. Why not shoot it all at once? It seems hard to believe that NASA or whomever would go to the effort to shoot fake backgrounds and then insert fake landers or the like. If you were going to go to a lot of effort, why not have the fake lander on the fake moon and take the one shot? It also seems to stretch credulity that, again, this super-sophisticated hoax would allow such a simple error to slip through. Like most conspiracy theories of this kind, there's some major cognitive dissonant thinking going on, where you have, on the one hand, the smartest people in the world pulling off this plot while simultaneously being the dumbest people in the world to let these major errors slip through. But let us return to the evidence. Well, it should be noted that, in fact, there are no photos where the crosshairs are behind objects. All the original moon photos have the crosshairs in the correct spot. What we are seeing on the internet, etc., are not originals, but reproductions that appear to have this effect. This is caused by an overexposure. That is, the crosshairs are actually very thin, 0.004 inch. When seen against a white background, the line is easily washed out and disappears. This washing out effect occurs when the original scanned or photos are copied. What the conspiracy types don't point out is that this effect can be seen in photos where the center of the crosshairs are washed out. And in some photos of the US flag, the lines disappear on the white stripes but are visible on the red stripes. Why would you Photoshop the white stripes on a flag? This also leads to a related, quote, piece of evidence. Some of the crosshairs are rotated or in the wrong place. Again, not on the originals. The wandering crosshairs are an artifact of what happens when people crop, enlarge, and manipulate the photos for aesthetic reasons. This type of, again, quote, evidence is what they call cherry picking. You highlight all the points that support your claim and conveniently ignore all those points that might contradict your hoax claims. There is an irony, and wait for that later, that some people complain that the quality of photos is proof that the landing is faked, that there's no way that the astronauts in those bulky suits could have made all those fantastic photos, that they must have been made under controlled conditions by expert photographers. First, it should be noted that NASA was using the best equipment they could get their hands on and shoot into space. They were using high-resolution Hasselblad 500 EL cameras with Carl Zeiss optics and a 70mm medium-format film magazine. This choice provided an excellent depth in field, extreme resolution, and, with up to 15 feet of film in a magazine, lots of opportunities to take great photos. And they did take some great shots, but again, only pointing out confirmatory evidence while ignoring dissenting evidence, the conspiracy advocates expose their bias. Why are all the photos NASA released so great? Because NASA only released the great photos. The vast majority of the shots were not so great. In fact, some of them were quite horrible. Those NASA kept out of the public eye. They were trying to put their best foot or photo forward. And before you say, well, ain't that convenient, lots of those bad photos are still available in NASA's archive. So it's not like they disappeared or anything.
Okay, still seems convenient, considering all that lighting used to take those moonshots wasn't cheap, that the Apollo photos show the angle and color of shadows are inconsistent with the fact the only light source was the sun. I mean, look at some of the shots and you can easily see hot spots that look to me like huge spotlights and other types of artificial lighting was used.
First of all, it should be pointed out that the sun is no more the only light source on the moon than it is here on Earth. That said, it may need to be stated that the moon is not Earth. Shadows on the moon are complicated by reflected light, uneven ground, wide-angle lens distortion, and lunar dust. Add to these complications, you have several light sources. The sun, sunlight reflected from the Earth, sunlight reflected from the moon's surface, and sunlight reflected from the astronauts and the lunar module. Most of these complications are due to the fact that the moon lacks an atmosphere, which, here on Earth, smooth dissipates and obscures these auxiliary lighting effects. On the moon, however, they're plain to see. Combined with lunar dust, which will reflect light in many directions, including in the shadows, you get far more complex scenes than one might expect, causing what would be inconsistent under normal circumstances here on Earth. But again, the moon is not normal conditions, nor is it on Earth. Even the hotspots are accounted for as light reflecting off the pits in the moon's surface, which focus and reflect light kind of like tiny glass spheres. Hell, even their very own spacesuits were acting like light mirrors, creating hotspots. You also have the second-hand effect showing up again. A number, maybe all the photos seen in publications and related media material, are not original images, but tweaked versions. Why tweak them? So they look better, more dramatic. And again, a quick reference to the original, and these effects are missing because, well, they were never there in the first place. They were only added after the fact.
Okay, here's another clue that backs the hoax conspiracy and nails the door shut on the photos being true moonshots. Again, the photos are too good. If, as the argument goes, they were shot into space, then radiation should have fogged them. What do you have to say about that?
There seems to be two answers to this. First, the most obvious, is that this particular film, specifically those 15-feet film cartridges, were metal cartridges, and this shielded the film, thus preventing fogging. Another answer seems to be that there may not be sufficient quantity or the right type of radiation that would damage film. This is evidenced by photos taken by the Lunar Explorer and the Soviet Luna 3, both of which showed no evidence of fogging from radiation. Now, from having too good of photos to the exact opposite. Here we have the irony foreshadowed before. A number of the conspiracy-minded people point out that the live video taken of the moon landing was very inferior to the level of technology at the time. Watch any contemporary TV show and you'll see great video quality. And I just said, NASA was using the best technology it could get. Well, actually I said, the best they could get and shoot into space. Film technology travels fairly well. Ergo, the photos, the 8 and 16 millimeter film taken by the Apollo astronauts are pretty great. The over-the-air video transmissions, well, that's a different set of technical issues. If you look at the video camera used by broadcast TV at the time, well, they were very good, but they were also huge. Even portable video packs were gigantic, and NASA was under constraints of both size and weight. The camera had to be designed to survive extreme temperature differences on the lunar surface, ranging anywhere from 121 degrees Celsius in the daylight to minus 157 degrees Celsius in the shade. Another requirement was to be able to keep the power to approximately 7 watts. There are not a lot of power plugs on the moon. And of course, the camera had to fit its broadcast signal into the very narrow bandwidth of the lander. With such limited bandwidth, NASA set the video standard for the camera as an analog signal. Not as good as a digital broadcast, but using 1/40th the bandwidth. They also limited it to black and white, with a resolution of 320 scan lines and a frame rate of only 10 frames per second. The low frame rate seems acceptable because, well, it was assumed that astronauts would not be moving around that much or with any great speed in their bulky suits. Of course, this set the stage for another vector of distortion. Although the quality of the original images are actually not that bad, you can easily find stills from the original slow scan TV transmissions from the moon, we're talking video and not stills. At the same time, the TV standards for North America was 30 frames per second and 525 lines. This meant that the moon video had to be what they call now upscaling to fit the expected standards. This scan conversion was primitive, and we must remember that NASA may have been using cutting-edge technology. It was still, though, the Stone Age with regards to wireless portable videography. This is why the live broadcast looks so very poor. But again, this was not the only film of the event. There are 8mm films of Man on the Moon, and they look great.
Well, if these astronauts were really on the moon, I'd like an explanation of one thing I noticed. I've seen the photos and I've noticed the backgrounds are all the same, even though the story is they were taken miles apart. So what's the explanation for that one? It seems plausible the photos could have been taken in a controlled situation with painted backgrounds.
Well, first off, and yet again, it seems if these deceptive folks were smart enough to pull off such a masterful hoax that they would not have thought to use different backgrounds for these fake shots. It is also not true that the apparent similarities of the background can only be explained by fakery. On Earth, we have an atmosphere. This means that objects in the distance fade and blur. However, on the moon, there's no atmosphere. So objects far away can seem a lot closer. This means that mountains that may be miles away in the background will look as though they are hills close up. This illusion of nearness is compounded by the lack of perspective objects, like trees and the like, to help us judge distance. As well as distant effects related to the lack of perspective objects, that is, well, the moon is kind of boring. I mean, it's rock and dust and stuff. And to be honest, it all does kind of look a lot alike. So it is not the case that they took a bunch of photos on a single soundstage in Arizona. But the fact that the moon ain't nothing like Arizona, and our eyes take every opportunity to fool us.
Really? Well, then if it was actually shot on the moon, and we see those dark black skies, what happened to the stars? I heard on the internet that they blacked out the stars, as opposed to painting in fakes like they did in the moon background because they knew they couldn't make the stars look realistic, like what the stars would look like from the moon's perspective. By making the sky black, they prevented people from realizing that the moon landing was a fake. Don, any answers?
Well, and I'm beginning to feel like a sound loop. In one breath, you're claiming that they're so smart, so perceptive, as to black out the sky so no one can tell the landing is a fake. But you just claim that they reused backdrops with impunity. Debunkers be damned. Again, they can be really smart or really dumb, but not both at the same time. That seems highly unlikely. Now, this claim seems to be plausible because we know here on Earth, when the sky is black, you can see the stars. Yet, on the moon, with its pitch black sky, you see no stars. How is this possible? Well, one thing you might not know, although it seems obvious from the pictures, well, the sky is black on the moon daytime and nighttime. Well, here on Earth, it only turns black at night. Because the moon has no atmosphere, the sky always looks black, irrespective of how bright out it may actually be. The moon landing took place during the lunar day. This meant that the stars, like here on Earth, are washed out by the bright sunlight, and not that they are missing. In fact, you can test this idea of washout. During the night, go to a well-lit parking lot, and you will see the stars disappear as you enter the light halo of the lot. In fact, there are a number of photos of the stars from Apollo en route to the moon. Another reason no stars are seen is due to the point of the pictures. They were taking images of the surface of the moon and the astronauts, not the stars. So the setting used on most of the cameras were set for high light environments.